Yeah, so tonight's shir is on this week's parsha, Parshas Va'era. And the title of the shir tonight is Elisheva and Elazar's Wife. So tonight we're going to look at a couple of psukim in this week's parsha where they mention the wife of Aaron, Elisheva, and also Elazar's wife. And it seems like it's very minimal information given by the Torah. But the Midrashim and the Gemaras teach us different lessons from the wives of Aaron and Elazar. So let's look through the Psukim and then try to look at some of the Gemaras and the Mefarshim, as we usually do, and analyze what exactly we can learn from Elisheva and Elazar's wife. So let's begin with the Psukim in source number one. It's Va'era, it's Va'ikach Aaron es Elisheva bas Aminadav v'achus nachshon lo li'isha. So in Va'era, it goes through a little bit of a history, and it mentions that Aaron got married to Elisheva, the daughter of Aminadav, and she was the sister of Nachshon. He took her for a wife, and they had four children, Nadav, Avihu, Elazar, ves Isamar. Uvnei Korach Asir v'Elkanah v'Aviasaf Eilem Mishpachos Akarchi. And the sons of Korach were Asir, Elkanah, and Aviasaf, and these were the houses of Karchi from Korach. Ve'elazar ben Aaron lakach lo bibinos putiel lo li'isha v'atele lo es pinchos eile rashi avos halaviyem l'mishpachosam. And then it mentions Elazar, the son of Aaron, how he took a wife from the daughters of Putiel, which we'll explain. And he had Pinchas, and these are the heads of the families of Leviim, who Aaron and Moshe, Asher Amar Hashem Lahem Lotziu Es Bnei Yisrael Me'aretz Mitzrayim L'Tzivosam. They are Aaron and Moshe, which Hashem told to take the Jews out of Mitzrayim. Heim Hamdabrim El Paro Melech Mitzrayim Lotziu Es Bnei Yisrael Me'aretz Hu Moshe V'Aaron. And they're the ones who spoke to Paro, the king of Egypt, in order to take the Jews out of Egypt. They are Moshe and Aaron. Okay, so the Torah presents us with a little bit of a family history here. And it mentions, in passing, it seems like, that Aaron's wife, her name was Elisheva, the daughter of Aminadav, the sister of Nachshon. And Nachshon was the Nasi, was the head of Yehuda. And there's a famous midrashim about Nachshon, how he was the one who jumped into Yamsuf before Kriya. And they had four children. The Torah doesn't give us much information. In fact, I think this is the only pasuk in Tanakh where Elisheva is mentioned. Seems to be a popular woman's name also, Elisheva. But what exactly, do we know any information about her? Is there anything that we can learn from the fact that the Torah mentions Elisheva bas Aminadav? And then also, if we look at Elazar, it's really not clear who his wife was. It's very cryptic. But the Torah mentions kind of in passing, again, that Elazar married a girl from Mibenos Putiel. Doesn't even identify her name. So what's the purpose of that? Why does the Torah teach us that? But the first question and the main question that we're going to start with are we're going to look at what Elisheva is about. Can we learn anything about Elisheva from at least the Midrashim and the Farshim? So the first parish is Rashi. And Rashi in source number two says, Achos Nachshon Mikan Lamanu Hanose Isha Tzarech Livdok V'Achiha. So the Torah, it didn't have to say that Elisheva, the daughter of Aminadav, is also the sister of Nachshon, because we could figure that out. We're smart, and we know that Nachshon's father was Aminadav. So why does the Torah have to teach us that she was the sister of Nachshon? It seems like obvious information. So Rashi comments, and he says that the Chiddush is that when you get married, you should check out your future wife's brother. So just like Aaron married Elisheva, partially because he checked out her brother, Nachshon, and he seemed to be a good guy, and he seemed to fit the criteria, so too, when you average person, average Jewish male, should always check out your wife's brother before you marry your wife in order to determine what he's like. So of course the question is, why are we supposed to check out your wife's brother? What exactly is the purpose of checking that out? Okay, so source number three just adds a little bit of explanation onto Rashi. But the main question on Rashi is that we learn from Elisheva in this pasuk that she's the sister of Nachshon, and we learn this principle that you're supposed to check out your wife's brother before you get married to your wife. So in source number three, it says, the Mizrahi, one of the Pirushim of Rashi, he says, Aval Gabi Lavan, Darshu Lahagit Shvacha, Mishum de lo shaych lomar shebadak b'Lavan. So it's a good question. It says that Rivka was the sister of Lavan, and it seems like Yitzchak, did he really want to get married to Rivka after checking out Lavan? It wouldn't seem like a good idea. So why does the Torah mention by Rivka that she is the sister of Lavan if it's not supposed to teach us that he checked out Lavan? Because had he checked out Lavan, he wouldn't have married her. So no, it's supposed to teach you a shvach, and it's a famous medrash that says by Rivka that even though she was a sister of Lavan, this terrible Rasha, she grew up in that household and she still became a tzedekes. So he says, "Delo havale lomar lo saviha velo achia velo mekoma shekvar huskaru lamala." Because it didn't have to say the father and the brother, or "Delo havale lemar lo saviha velo achia velo mekoma shekvar huskaru lamala." So the fact that it mentions Besuel by Rivka, and it mentions where she came from, it's all a drasha. Not that Yitzchak had to check everybody out, or Eliezer. So he says, so maybe you'll say that you have to check out everybody before you get married to your wife. Don't just check out the brother, but check out the father and check out the place. So he says that's impossible. So he says the reason why you're supposed to check out your future wife's brother is because your children, your boys, are going to end up like your brother-in-law, your future brother-in-law. And we don't say that by the father. We don't say that you should check out the father because your boys will end up like the father. We say check out your wife's brother because your boys will end up like the brother. Okay, so that's interesting. We'll see the Gemara on that. So why is that the case? Go ahead. V'chol shekein. Hold on. All right. V'chol shekein. Be'anshei mekoma. And of course, you're not going to learn out about how your children are going to turn out, your boys, based on the people in that area that you're marrying the woman from. If she's from, Atlanta, or she's from L.A., or you don't have to check out the place. You just have to check out her brother. Seems to be the ikker. So why didn't Aaron just check out the father? Why check out the brother? Could have just said check out the father. So the point is that you have to check out your wife's brother before you get married to your wife. And the reason is because there seems to be an idea that your children, your boys particularly, are going to end up like your wife's brother. So therefore, if your wife has a good brother, then it's a good, thankfully my brother-in-law is a good guy, but if your wife has a good brother, so you're probably going to have kids that are like him. But for some reason, the Medrash doesn't seem to indicate that you check out the father. Why would you say check out your wife's father? Because perhaps the children are going to end up like the wife's father, like your future father-in-law. For some reason, it's more important to check out your wife's brother. So the question is why? I would think that your wife's father would also have the genetic linkage to your children, to your sons, and would also be a contributor. So why is the brother more important? And there's a Gemara that supports this idea. It's not just made up from the Medrash. It's sourced in the Gemara. It says, Amar Rava, it's Bava Basra Daf Kuf Yud Amud Aleph. And it says, Amar Rava, Nosi Isha Tzarech Sheyivdok Ba'achia. So if you get married, you have to check out your wife's brother. Shenemar, Vayikach Aaron es Elisheva bas Aminadav achus Nachshon. Vimashma Shenemar bas Aminadav ein yodea shachus Nachshon hi. Once it says that she's the daughter of Aminadav, do we not know that she's also the sister of Nachshon? Of course. Ma'atam alomar achus Nachshon. So what's it trying to teach us when it says achus Nachshon, the sister of Nachshon? Mikan shanosi isha tzarech shivdok ba'achia. That anybody who gets married has to check out your wife's brother. It's interesting, and then it keeps going. Tana rov banim domin l'achyaim, and it taught that most of your boys are going to be similar to your brother-in-law, your future brother-in-law. So what's interesting is that this isn't really halacha l'maisa. It's not brought down by the Rambam or the Shulchan Aruch. So it doesn't seem to be a chiyuv that you have to check out your wife's brother, and you can't marry her if her brother's a rasha. But the Gemara corroborates the idea that your children, your boys, particularly, are going to end up like your wife's brother. So the question is why particularly your wife's brother? What's the idea behind that, and how do we learn that out from Elisheva? So let's do the Rashbam, and then we'll try to give an idea. So the Rashbam says, Shivduk Bachia, just to explain it, Shabbanim Domin L'Achia Eim Kidalokaman. So again, he says that the brother, this, your children, your sons are going to turn out like your future brother-in-law. Melamed shebadak ba'achia lefi shehaisa achlus nachshon shayanasi lamate Yehuda mitoch chashivusa lekach lacha. So Rashi, the Rashbam is interesting. He says that because she was the sister of Nachshon and he was the Nasi, that's why, because of his chashivas, the chashivas of Nachshon, that's why he married her. So that Rashbam is really puzzling. I don't know how to answer it, because the Gemara is saying the reason why you should check out the brother is because your children, your boys, will end up like the brother. And maybe he's just saying, the Rashbam's explaining that because Nachshon was chashiv, he understood that his children, his sons, would also have the same type of chashivas as Nachshon. So perhaps that's what he's saying. But the question is, what's this idea? Why do we say that when you are about to get married, you fall in love with a girl, that the first thing you should do, not the first thing, but what you should do is you have to check out the brother and see if the brother is a good guy. And if he's a good guy, if he's a Talmud Chacham, then it's a good idea to marry that girl because your children will turn out like him. But why not check out the father, the grandfather? Why specifically the brother? So that's the question that I wanted to take up and try to give an idea for. So before I give an idea, does anybody have any svaras, any possibilities, any theory as to why it would just be to check out the wife's brother and not necessarily the father, in terms of figuring out how your children are going to turn out, how your boys are going to turn out?
Rabbi Ginsburg?
Yes.
Which one of Aaron's four children turned out to be like Nachshon?
They all did. They all did, because they all were a chashev. It's just Nadav and Avihu were on a high level, so they all had the similar characteristics. It's just that they had a flaw and they failed, but that doesn't mean that they lacked in terms of their tzidkus. In fact, the Torah and the Mefarshim say that they were an extremely high level. But I would say they all ended up like that because they were all kohanim. They all partook of working in the mikdash and they had this chashivas. So what exactly is the chiddush that we can learn out from Elisheva?
They also had Aaron as a father and Moshe Rabbeinu as the...
That's the question, exactly. So that's the question. Good question. So you're saying, again, so what is it about the brother-in-law? I mean, you're right. There's other factors. There are more important factors. Like, let's say you fall in love with a girl and she's amazing and you think that she's an amazing, going to be an amazing mother, an amazing person. So shouldn't you just marry her regardless of her brother, which you see happened with Rivka and Lavan? So then there must be an idea here. So it doesn't mean that, obviously it doesn't trump the concept that you should marry a girl who's on a high level. If you find a girl on a high level, you shouldn't dump her because her brother's evil or not a good guy. But there seems to be a concept here that's being alluded to in the Medrash, learned out from Elisheva. So I think the idea is not a physical idea. It's not a genetic concept, because if that were the case, then you should go to the father-in-law. Why go to the brother? But I think the idea is that when a woman grows up with siblings, especially particularly a brother, so she's gonna see how the brother is raised, and she's gonna witness and be a first party witness to the way that her brother was raised by her parents, by her mother and father. And that's going to be it's going to have a primary impact on her, whether she's older or younger than her sibling, her brother. She's going to witness at some point in her life how her brother was treated and how her brother was raised. And that's going to be significant, and it's going to impact the way that she parents her children. So I think the chiddush, it's just a simple chiddush. I don't think it's such a deep idea, but I think it's highlighting a psychological point that a woman is most likely going to raise her children the way that she witnesses, not her children, but her sons, the way that she witnessed her brother being raised. And that's going to be the model for her as to how she raises her children. So I think that's why you want to check out the brother. Because if the brother turned out good, so then you know that she learned from the way that he was raised, that she learned a good technique, good method for raising boys, young boys, and making them talmidei chachamim. So therefore, I think that's why it's more important to check out the brother, because from seeing the brother being raised by the family, by the parents, she's more likely to gain a technique in terms of her own parenting skills vis-a-vis her own sons. And in fact, you know, I see that with my own family. My wife, my brother-in-law was the youngest, and there were three older girls, and they all kind of took care of him, and they not only took care of him, but they also watched how their parents raised him, and I'm sure that has an impact on the way she raises my sons, my children. So there's a psychological concept that it's alluding to, but it doesn't mean that it's all or nothing, of course, like Howie was saying. It doesn't mean that if you meet somebody who's an amazing person that you shouldn't get married to them if their brother's evil. It just means that there is an impact, a strong psychological impact on a woman when she witnesses her brother being raised, and it's very likely that she's going to imitate or copy the same type of style of parenting vis-a-vis her sons. And that's why you're more likely to have children or sons that end up like the brother, because the same type of skill, the same type of technique is going to be utilized by your future wife that was used by your brother-in-law. So I think that's the idea that we learned from Elisheva, and that's why Aaron married, part of the reason, not the only reason. I'm sure she was an excellent person as well, and we'll see that she had great qualities, but she was a tzedekes, and part of the reason why Aaron married her was that he realized through the fact that she was raised by Aminadav, but also from the fact that she witnessed Nachshon, who became this great Nasi, and how he was raised by his parents, that would have an indelible impact on the way she would raise her children, her boys. So I think that's the first chiddush that we can learn. So from this pasuk about Elisheva, we learn out this psychological insight about how you should look at your check out your brother-in-law and see from him how you think your wife will ultimately parent your boys. It's not an all or nothing, of course, but it's just giving you an insight, some type of knowledge as to what to look for and how to judge whether your wife is going to be a good parent or not. Okay, so that's the first idea. So we're going to do about four ideas total, actually three mostly, but the first idea, three and one extra, one additional, but the first idea I wanted to share is that concept, that when you get married, part of your duty is to check out your brother-in-law and see, and you can tell and you can gain some insight into the way that your wife will parent your boys from the way that your brother-in-law turned out. Okay, so number six is another medrash based on Elisheva. So it says in Bava Basra, Daf Kuf Tesamid Beis, so we're going backwards a little bit. And it says, Amar Rabbi Lazar, Lo'olam Yidbak Adam Betovim, Shehare Moshe Shinasa Bas Yisro, Yatza Mimenu Yehonasan, Aaron Shinasa Bas Aminadav, Yatza Mimenu Pinchas. So the Gemara says now that you should always check out the relatives. Tovim is the family that they come from. And the reason is because Moshe married the daughter of Yisro, and his grandson, Moshe's grandson, his name was Yehonasan, and he was an Oved of Avodah Zarah. So they're saying that because Moshe married Bas Yisro, and Yisro is involved in Avodah Zarah, even though he did tshuva, but because Moshe didn't marry into the right family, so therefore Yehonasan emerged. But Aaron married into the right family, Aminadav, so now it's referring to the father, Yatzav Yimenu Pinchas, so his grandson was Pinchas, this great individual. Look at Rashi. Rashbam, sorry, source number 7. Yatzav Yimenu Yehonasan, Ben Benoshel Moshe. The grandson of Moshe was Yehonasan. He was a bad guy. And Pinchas, Ben Benoshel Aaron, he was obviously a tzaddik. So another idea we learned from Elisheva, at least, or from Aminadav, is that if you want to judge, or if you want to get married, you should look for somebody who comes from a good family. And it seems to be obvious, that point, but it's weird that Moshe is being criticized. And why is it that a couple generations later, why is it that there's this flaw that emerges? I mean, why are we gonna tie it down to Moshe marrying Bas Yisro? And Yisro was actually a good person, and he did tshuva, and not only did he do tshuva, but there's a question of whether he was misguided or not. But either way, he wasn't exactly, you know, a bad guy. He wasn't a Rasha or anything. And yet Moshe is being blamed here. It seems like for some reason the fact that he married Bas Yisro affected his grandson, and Aaron, the fact that he married the daughter of Aminadav, so that reflected on the grandson, the type of grandson that he had, which is Pinchas. So the question is, why is there this significant lag? And also, what's the criticism of Moshe? What's the good here? What exactly is the difference between the two? So that's the question. So there's a Rambam in source number 8, which this Gemara, based on this Gemara, the Rambam in the Ein Mishpat, they quote this Rambam, and it's an interesting Rambam, fascinating, and we'll try to understand what this means, that a person should get married into a good family, and if they don't get married into a good family, so then ultimately they might pay the price by their grandchildren or their grandsons being either heretics slash Oved Avodah Zarah, like Moshe Rabbeinu, and or Aminad or Pinchas that came from Aaron. Okay, so it's very interesting that Moshe's grandson was.
Can I throw a wrench into 7 and 8?
Oh yeah, sure.
I think Pinchas is related to Yisro.
That's the next Gemara. We're gonna do that. Don't worry. Good question. Okay. The Gemara itself asked that question. Did you ever do this Gemara on Baba Basra? Maybe, because the Gemara asked that question. The Gemara asked that question. Yeah, that's the next question in the Gemara. What do you mean? Pinchas was from Yisro, so you have the same problem. And that's why it's comes from Elazar's wife was Benos Putiel. So we'll get to that. That's at the end of the shir. So good question. So let's look at number 8 before we get to that. So the Rambam says, Lo yisa adam bas ame aretz she'im meis ogola banav ame aretz yu she'in iman yodas keser Torah. So a person should never marry the daughter of an ame aretz, of a simpleton, someone who's ignorant of Torah. Because if they die, if you as the husband die or go into Gullus, you're exiled, your children will end up, your sons will end up Amei Aretz. Why? Because the mother doesn't know Torah. She's not chayiv in learning Torah. So who's going to raise them? It's going to be your father-in-law. And if your father-in-law is an Amei Aretz, good luck to your kids. He says, V'lo yasi bito l'Amei Aretz. And you shouldn't marry your daughter off to an Amei Aretz either, to a person who doesn't know Torah. Shekola nosin bito la'amaretz kimi shekofsa v'nafsna lefnei ari make ubol v'in lo boshes panim. This is very graphic, but the Rambam says that it's as if you tied up your daughter and put her in front of a lion, and he's just going to hit her, and he's going to have bia with her, relations with her, without any embarrassment. U'olam yimkor adam kol mash yeshlo v'yisa bas tamu chacham. A person should sell everything, give up all of his money to marry the Bas Tamil Chacham. Why? Because if you die, then your children, your banim, will end up becoming Tamidei Chachamim. V'chein yasi bito l'tamil chacham, she'ein dover maguna v'lo mariva b'veso shel tamil chacham. And another reason why you should marry your daughter off to a Tamil Chacham is that there's nothing displeasurable and there's no fights in the household of a Tamil Chacham. So the Rambam kind of illustrates what the Gemara is saying. The Gemara is not so clear. It just says that a person should check out the family. They should marry Betovim, good people. Amongst a family should be a good family. And he says Moshe, he quotes Moshe marrying Bas Yisro. And you see that his grandson, Yehonasan, was an Ovid of Avodah Zarah. And Aaron marrying Aminadav, and Pinchas came. But the Rambam says the reasoning behind it, You would think if you're just reading this Gemara without the Rambam, that the idea is that whatever family your wife comes from is going to be indicative of the environment, indicative of her and her personality. But the Rambam doesn't say that. The Rambam says that the idea is that if you die, so then you want to ensure that there's going to be people to raise your children that are Tamdei Chachamim, to raise your boys. And same thing, the second reason the Rambam gives is that the household of a Tamil Chacham is very calm, and it's not really a household of fighting. And there's nothing displeasurable and disgusting in the house of a Tamil Chacham. So the second point is, or the second question and slash answer as far as, what is the idea? What's the concept according to the Rambam? And how do we tie it back to the Medrash by Moshe and Aaron? So I think that the idea that's being expressed. Yes. Yeah, go ahead.
Just a thought here. The Rambam fully worked out here, but it seems like it's not that, you know, if you marry the Bas Tamil Chacham, it's good, and if you marry the Bas Amhar, it's definitely going to turn out bad. But it's that if you marry the Bas Amhar, there's a great risk there. There's many things that could happen, and you really have no, so to speak, insurance against that. It's a great risk, and you're really not so to speak, hedging against it.
Yeah.
There's a great likelihood that the grandchild, in the Gemara, is going to turn out to have problems. But if you marry into the family of a Talmud Chacham, you're so to speak closing up many of those risks because you're so to speak surrounding them in Torah.
Exactly. Yes. So that's exactly the idea. Just to add to that a little bit, but yeah, I agree 100%. So the concept the Rambam is saying is that marrying a Bas Tamil Chacham, like David was saying, is, or Bas Tamil Chacham is related to the concept that you can only do so much, you know, in raising your child, but there's also going to be an environment that they're going to be exposed to that you might not be around. And that's why I think Moshe is the classic example, because Moshe, the whole idea of Moshe was that he was never around. In fact, the Medrash says that his children weren't ready for leadership. Some shittas say that his children were, I think there's Midrashim that say that his children were not on the derech completely. And part of the reason is because Moshe's life was dedicated towards panim el panim and relating to God. And as a result, there were some secondary effects, which is that his children, he wasn't around his children as much, and his children didn't have the same relationship to him. And that was a side effect of him having to be the leader of Klal Yisrael. But the concept is that when you marry somebody, you have to recognize that there are going to be situations where you're not going to be around, where, you know, you're not going to necessarily be able to control who they're exposed to, and they might be exposed into a situation which will ultimately harm them. And that's why it's the third generation, because the first generation, your children, you have more control over, and whatever effects come from the family of your mother, the wife's family, they could be moderated by the father. But ultimately, it's going to come out. There's going to be some effect on future generations of the possibility of exposing, you know, your children to these outside influences, to these negative influences. So as David was saying, the point is by Moshe Rabbeinu that even though Yisrael was not a bad guy, but nevertheless, he was an Ovid of Avodah Zarah. It's not a genetic idea, because if it were, then it should be the child, but it's the grandchild, meaning that when a person gets married, they have to acknowledge the fact that their children are going to be exposed to other people, particularly in their wife's family, and they're not going to be around all the time. They're not going to be able to control the situation all the time. And once you do that, so then, as David was saying, you're running a risk, and you're taking a risk, and the risk could ultimately end up backfiring. So you want to, if you're getting married, you want to make sure and ensure in all possible manner that your children will turn out Talmidei Chachamim, and you have to shore up all the risks and ensure that the children as much as possible become Talmidei Chachamim. So I think that's the idea that the Gemara is saying, and we learn out again from Aaron's choice of Elisheva, which is that he understood that even though Aaron was the Kohen Gadol, he understood that he might have limited time with his children, he might not be there all the time, and that there's other environmental factors that they'd be exposed to outside of himself, and it would have ultimately a detrimental effect. So that's why there is a benefit, there is a perfection in him marrying Elisheva, whereas Moshe Rabbeinu, it's not a flaw on his part, but the idea was that Moshe didn't have that, and because he wasn't around, his children were therefore exposed to foreign concepts, perhaps when they weren't ready for them, and it had a negative effect on the future generations. So I think that's the idea.
Regenzer?
Yes.
Just, and maybe it's a little bit of a klutz kasha, but it sounds like then, if you take the criticisms of Moshe's children, or subscribe to the view that they were not so ideal,
right,
it would sound like you wouldn't want to marry Moshe's daughter.
You wouldn't want to marry... Good question. That's a good question. Well, you would check out her brothers, and that would be a bad sign, so correct?
That's the point.
I guess not. I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's not crazy to say that. It doesn't mean that she doesn't deserve to be married, Moshe's daughters, if he didn't have any daughters. But had he had daughters, you know, every Jewish girl deserves to get married, and it's still a mitzvah to get married. But yeah, if you were a Talmid Chacham, it's a funny thing, but you might not necessarily look to marry Moshe's daughter. So yeah, it's an interesting question. I got to think about that more, but it seems like based on these Gemaras, that would indicate that. Yeah, interesting. All right, so let's just go on.
You have further support, actually, right, from the fact that after the snap, and he didn't do Milah on his sons.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Korah had to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not so far fetched that he was really consumed by.
By his leadership. Yes, definitely. Yeah. And also, I mean, I think there's some midrashim that seem to say that they were off the derech, but I know that the Rashi, I think, says that he wanted his son to take over for him by Yehoshua. So according to that Pirush, obviously Gershom must have been on some level, or he wasn't necessarily off the derech, but he wasn't on the level of Moshe, certainly. because Moshe would never have assumed that he would take over the leadership position if he wasn't, you know, if he was just an Am Haaretz and he was off the derech. But I think there's, I'm pretty sure there's midrashim that seem to indicate that they were off the derech somewhat and they were not on the level, partially because Moshe didn't have the time, because he was so dedicated to being a leader. So yeah. All right, so let's just, this last, second to last idea is very fascinating. So in Zevachim, there's one more idea about Elisheva, because the Torah doesn't teach us about it. We only have the Gemaras to teach us about her. So the Gemara says in Meisve, and this isn't even a Chiddush, but the way the Gemara phrases it teaches us an idea. So it says Meisve. The question was, in the Gemara background, the question is, does Moshe have the definition of a Kohen or not? Because Moshe worked in the Mikdash when the Mikdash was being consecrated, was being developed, and Moshe worked there. And the question the Gemara asks is, did he have a chalashim of Kohen or not? It's a great question. Was he, so the Gemara brings an objection that, you know, he wasn't a Kohen. So it says, Meisve, so they bring an objection, he's not a Kohen. Chamesh smachos haisa Elisheva yesera avinos Yisrael. So the Gemara says that Elisheva, the wife of Aaron, had five happy things that occurred to her that did not happen to the rest of Benos Yisrael, the other women in Klal Yisrael. So what were they? Yivama Melech. So the individual who would do Yibam on her was the Melech, which is Moshe Rabbeinu. Isha Kohen Gadol. Her husband was the Kohen Gadol, i.e. Aaron. Benoah Segen. So her son Elazar was the second hand, the Kohen Gadol. Ben Benoah Meshuach Melchama. And his her grandson, Pinchas, was the Meshuach Melchama. He was the Kohen that was responsible for getting the troops riled up to battle. The Achiah, Nasi Shevet, and her brother was the head of Yehuda. So she had a lot of happiness. Va'avela al Shnei Banah. But nevertheless, she had Avelas. She mourned over her two sons, Nadav and Avihu, who died. Ksani Mihas, so the Gemara asks, Yevama Melech. Seems like from this brisa, or this that her yibam, the one who did yibam on her was a melech Moshe. He wasn't a kohen. So melech in kohen gadol lo. He wasn't a kohen gadol Moshe. He's just a melech. So ema af melech. So the Gemara just says no, even a melech. He's a kohen gadol and a melech. Fine. So the Gemara just teaches us from here. We're not really focusing on the question of whether Moshe is a kohen or not. It's a good question. I think I gave a share on this many years ago. But the point is that the Gemara seems to highlight that Elisheva had these five great things happen to her, but then it kind of leaves us off on a downer there. At the very end, it says, Avela Sha'al Shnei Banah. The Gemara doesn't explain what the juxtaposition of these five good things are to this negative at the end, that Elisheva had all these great things, all these happy things happen to her, but nevertheless, in the end of the day, her two children died. So what's the connection between the two? It doesn't seem to lead, one doesn't seem to lead into the other. So the Rashi's over there says, we'll just do the Rashi's. Haisa Elisheva Yisera, B'yom Shukam HaMishkan, Kari B'Seder Olam. So on the day that the Mishkan was, Hukam was set up, that was the day where all these five things occurred, or where she recognized these five things, and she was so happy. B'nah Segen, Elazar, Ben B'nah, Pinchas, Meshuach Mochaba, Kida Ashacham B'midyan, Osam B'es Pinchas, Ben Elazar, Kohen, Latzava, V'hu HaMidaber Al'am, Shema Yisrael, Tam Krivim Ayom Al Milchama Al Veichem. So her grandson was Pinchas, the Meshuach Melchaba, Achia Nachshon. And then the Gemara says, Ketanai, we didn't do that yet. We didn't do that. So what's the juxtaposition? What's the connection between the fact that Elisheva was so happy and then she was Misabel on her children? So where does this Gemara present itself? So I found it, I tracked it down, and the Gemara presents itself in the Midrashim on Koheles. So the pasuk in Koheles says, "L'schok amarti meholal, ulesimcha maza osa." So for laughter, I say it's always mixed in with. We'll see from Rashi, but it means mixed in, intertwined. Ulesimcha maza osa. So what does simcha do? What's the purpose? What's the goal? What's the ultimate goal of simcha? What does it accomplish? So the pasuk's Koheles. It's a famous pasuk. Whenever I read Koheles, I always look for the psukim that I see in Gemaras, and this is a classic. L'schok amarti meholal, l'simcha maza osa. I think this is one of the psukim that they show as a contradiction to other psukim in Koheles, in the Gemara describing whether it's kisvei kodesh or not. But anyways, so Rashi says l'schok amarti meholal, meureves bevechiv anacha. So schok, laughter, it's mixed in with crying and pain, anacha. L'simcha mazo What does Simcha accomplish? Tova osa hare sofa tuga. So what does it accomplish? Ultimately, it'll end in grief. So what exactly is this pasuk talking about? I mean, when we're happy, it's not, why is it necessarily intertwined with grief? Is that true? And furthermore, l'simcha mazo, so what does it accomplish? Well, it makes you happy and you feel good. So that's how it answered Kohelis. Tzchok is good, laughter is fun, and happiness is great because it makes you feel good. But what is the pasuk talking about? So this is where we see the Medrash talking, or the Medrash based on our Gemara, or I don't know if the Gemara is based on the Medrash, but the Medrash is basically the same as the Gemara, and it gives us more insight. So look at the Medrash. Davar acher l'schok amarti mehalal ma urbav haschok shesachka midas hadin al Elisheva bas Aminadav. Elisheva bas Aminadav rasa arba smachos biyom echad. Rasa Yevama Melech, Baala Kohen Gadol, Achia Nasi, Shnei Banehas, Segne Kuhuna, Nadav Nabiyu, Kemish Nechasu Baneav, Yatsu Srufim, Navcha Simchasal Ovel. So as soon as her children went in to the Kodesh HaKadoshim and they died, so her Simcha turned into Avelis. Hu Adin Achare Mos Shnei Bnei Aaron, and the same thing is after the death of Bnei Aaron. So what's it saying? So it's saying that the idea of l'schok amarti mehalal is typified by Elisheva, because she was so happy, she was laughing at all the great happiness that she experienced on the day of the Hukam HaMishkan. She recognized all these great things about her family, that she was related to Moshe, she's her children, her brother, she had such great chashivas, but nevertheless, it all turned into avelis. And this is the definition of l'schok amarti mehalal, that laughter is intertwined with crying and pain. So it seems like an exceptional situation. So what exactly is this pasuk teaching us through Elisheva? And before we answer that, I just want to do the second part of the medrash, a different medrash, and it says v'chein u'simcha mazo osa. And the end of the pasuk is referring to Aaron. Like the end of the medrash before, it's talking about Achrei Moshe ben Aaron, which is when it happened. But then look at this Medrash in 14. It says, "Kigon simcha shahisa la'aron b'yamashmini." This is a reference to the simcha of Aaron. Ve'ad shu someach nefcha simchasa liyagon. So he was so happy. And then all of a sudden, all his happiness turned into anguish. Shenamar, vatete ish melifnei Hashem. V'chein bahar b'yamekomo, she'en adam yodea ad kama timshach simchaso shrikaso. L'fichach roi le'adam li'os emas baro lav kol shavisha. So people don't know how long their happiness is going to last for, because it could change in any moment. And therefore, it's appropriate for a man to always have the ema, the fear of their creator on them all the time. Kederach sha'ata motza b'dor ha'mabul, sh'nemar b'hem, zaram nachal nefneim imam, uchsev v'yimachal min aretz. They were so happy, and then all of a sudden they were destroyed. V'chein b'stom ksev, eretz mimena yatza lechem, uchsev v'hashem himter asadom v'alamora. So the Medrash is saying that really, what does it mean, l'simcha mazo osa? What does it accomplish? The idea of the pasuk is a reference to Aaron, that we see that Aaron was so happy, and then all of a sudden everything turned towards the bad, and his children died. Same thing we see in other situations in Torah, by Dor HaMabul, by Sodom and Amorah. So we see that happiness can turn any moment. So what exactly is is Kohelis trying to teach us about the psychology, the nature of Simcha and Tzchok through Elisheva, which is L'Tzchok Amarti Mehalal, and through Aaron, which is L'Simcha Mazo Osa? So what exactly is the idea? So that's the question. So it seems like there's one theme in these two midrashim, and the theme seems to be that when a person's happy or they're laughing, there's two ideas. One is when you're laughing, you tend to think that there's almost like a reality to your laughter. It's real, it's permanent. There's a permanence that you ascribe to your laughter when you're laughing really hard, and when you're smiling, and when you're super happy. And the idea seems to be that in itself is not really accurate. There's no real permanence to your laughter. There's no real, I would say, reality. I keep using reality, but there's no real permanence to laughter, in the idea that it can change from one to the other. So it's not really pure. Laughter is not pure in its form of happiness, because it could turn into avilus very quickly. So there's no security really that a person should get through laughing. And the same thing in happiness. When a person feels happy, a lot of times they feel secure, and they feel a certain sense of security through the fact that they're happy. Like, I'm in a good situation, and you feel happy by yourself, and you're walking around and you're strutting your stuff. But the point is that Lo Simcha Mazo'osa from Aaron is the concept that happiness, that a person has to recognize or has to acknowledge the effect of happiness on you, which is that you feel good and you forget the fact that you're subject to pain and to the possibility of struggle. And the reality is that happiness is really something that's, again, it's similar. It's something that's not real. It doesn't have any permanence. And in fact, it has the potential to affect a person psychologically and make them feel like they're impervious to any type of struggle. So the idea of the pasuk L'schol Kamarti Melulal, that it's more Rebbes B'Vechiv Anacha, is teaching you that really from Elisheva we see that schok doesn't have any, does is not defined as something intrinsically removed from B'Chiv Anacha. In fact, it could change just like that. There's no real permanence to it. And when a person's laughing, they feel like they feel a certain security in laughter. And the reality is that that security is false. And it's just a false security that's created by your psyche. And the same thing with happiness. When a person feels happy, they get a certain security out of their situation. And the happiness is a result of that, and also affects a person's feeling of security. And the point is, Lo Simcha Mazo'osa, that simcha, what does it do? All it does is affect man's psyche to the point where they feel like they can't be harmed, that they can't experience the opposite. So that's the lesson that Kohelis is trying to teach us, which is that we when you get engaged and when you're involved in simcha, you're involved in tzchok, so you might believe or you might maintain a certain security. And that's what tzchok does to a person, and that's what simcha does to a person. In both situations, it gives man a certain level of security. But the idea is that security is false. And that's what Kohelis is trying to teach us about the nature of man and their psyche, that the psyche tricks us when we laugh and when we're happy. And it tricks us in a way where we feel secure, and that security is permanent. And that, from a philosophical standpoint, it's not true. And you see from Elisheva and Aaron, from both of the situations, that things could change very drastically and very quickly. So I think that's the lesson. So the lesson is that man should realize that when you laugh and when you're happy, that there's a false sense of security that emerges. And that sense of security, it's natural. Your psyche is involved in creating that security, but that security is really false. And that's what Kohelis is trying to teach us. It's a false sense of security that's created through laughter and happiness. So we learned that out from Elisheva. So the last point...
Rick,
yeah, go ahead.
Rick, Andrew.
Yeah.
I think the Gemara sounds like where Kohelis and Medrash is saying that they're interwoven. And I think that there's two key observations. One, people cry, laugh so hard they start crying, just as an aside.
Okay.
But number two is that happiness is always about, is a relative state to where you just were, as a sadness. And a person in the peaks of their happiness is also aware that it's transient, and it's just setting them up for the next sadness or the next wave or the next cycle.
Right.
And they're really inseparable. So the greatest, the high.
Right.
That they're really exposing themselves to that sort of vulnerability.
Right.
And that's just sort of our
interval. Right, because you're saying it's an impossibility for a man to be in that state in a permanent way, but you believe that, and your mind convinces you of that, and then when you're off that high, which is inevitable, which is what you're saying, I think it's inevitable, so then you're not prepared for it. So that's what Kohelis is trying to teach us, that really man has to be aware of the fact that when they're laughing and when they're happy, that the security that they get from that and that high, that sense of high, is really not something that will protect them. And it's something that instead it emboldens them in a false manner. So it creates vulnerability when they're exposed to bechi and to sadness. So yeah. Okay, so one last point. Just Howie's point was the Gemara. The Gemara says, what about Pinchas? So Howie made a good point. What about Pinchas? He's from Yisro. And yet Pinchas was a tzaddik, and his mother was from a bad family, the same family that Moshe had married from. But yet Pinchas turned out pretty good. So what exactly How do we answer that? So Vahuksiv Elazar ben Aaron Makaf Lo Mivanos Putialo Lisha. My love to Asi Miyisro Shapite Magalam Avodazara. Did Pinchas not come from a descendant, or was he not a descendant of Yisro who did Avodazara, who fattened up the calves for Avodazara? Lo di Asi Miyosef Shapitpit be Yisro. So the Gemara says no, he wasn't from Yisro. He was from Yosef. Yosef battled. Pitpit means to battle with his Yetzer. So Mibinos Putiel is not a reference to Yisro, it's a reference to Yosef. Ve'alosh vatim vazimoso, ve'omrem re'isem ben putizeh, ben shepitim avi imo agalim la'avodazara, yarog nasi shevet mi'Yisrael. So the Gemara says, weren't they teasing him, Pinchas, when he killed Zimri? Weren't they teasing him and saying, this one whose grandfather was Yisro, avi imo was Yisro, Yarog Nasi Shevet Miyisrael, so he's going to kill Nasi, like Zimri, which is funny, because Pinchas wasn't like a nobody, he was still the son of Elazar, but it's funny that they were mocking him, and they were saying, you know, how is this possible? So if you go to 17, the Gemara keeps going, and it says, Ela I avuha de ime mi Yosef, ima de ime mi Yisrael. So if his father's mother was from Yosef, so his mother's mother was from Yisro. So his grandmother was from Yisro. So it doesn't mean his mother herself was from Yisro. It's her grandmother who is a descendant, I guess, of Yisro, or was a daughter of Yisro. Iavua de ime mi Yisro, ima de ime mi Yosef. Or the other way is that if her mother's father was from Yisro, so ima de ime mi Yosef. So the mother's mother was from Yosef. So the answer is that really Pinchas was very far removed from Yisro. He wasn't really a direct descendant. It wasn't a grandfather or anything of his, Yisro. It was further removed because ima de ime mi Yisro, it means that so his grandmother was the daughter, I guess the daughter of Yisro, and or his ima or sorry, o I avua de ime mi Yisro, or his grandfather was the son of Yisro, I guess, was the son of Yisro. But nevertheless, the point is that it's not the same because he's further removed, like Moshe and Yehonasan. It's a question on that. Moshe and Yehonasan, and also Elazar, sorry, and also Aaron and Pinchas. But Pinchas was further removed from Yisro. So that's the answer. And also, it wasn't just Yisro. He was also connected to Yosef. And that's what it means, that he was a combination of the two. That's why the Psukim are really cryptic, because they're referencing two ideas. One idea about Yisro, and the other idea about Yosef, to teach us that Pinchas emerged from both lineages to create this individual of Pinchas. But the point is that it sounds like the Gemara is pretty serious, and it sounds like the Gemara is saying that had Pinchas been from Yisro, more directly, a grandson of Yisro, then it would have been a problem. Then perhaps he would have been affected to the point where he wouldn't have been capable of doing this act. I mean, of course he would be a different person, but the idea is that in order to create an individual like Pinchas, who's a unique individual, somebody who's so dedicated to Torah that they're able to buck the society, the rules of society, and do what's right by the idea of Kanaim Shepogimbo, you have to have a lineage that and parents and grandparents that were conscious of all the, like David was saying, conscious of all the potential exposures that the generations would be exposed to previously, and try to shore up the risks and ensure that all the generations will be in environments, not only be taught by Talmidei Chachma, but be environments of Chachma. And only then can you have an individual like Pinchas. But if you don't have that, then there's always risk. And you'll never, it'll be more difficult, I would say, to have an individual on the level of Pinchas. So I think that's what the Gemara is teaching us. So we're ending this year. Just to summarize, and then you can ask questions, or you can ask questions anytime. But just to summarize, so really just three and a half points. So the first point was that you want to check out your future wife's brother. Why? Because your future wife's brother is indicative of how your wife's going to parent, because she witnessed how her brother was parented, and she'll probably take those techniques and use them with your children, with your sons in particular. The second idea is that from Elisheva that you want to, and Aminadav, from, and that Aaron checked out the family, and not just the brother, but also the father. And the point is that you want to marry your child off to a Bas Tamil Chacham, and the Rambam gives a reason, and he says the reason is because if you die, or if you're in Golos, then you want somebody to be able to raise your children, and somebody who's a Talmud Chacham will raise your children correctly. And also, the household of a Talmud Chacham is really one that is not Maguna, and there's no fighting. So what is the Rambam teaching us? He's teaching us that your children and your grandchildren will be exposed to environments when you're not around, and those environments will be predominantly your family, your wife's family, and you have to be aware of that when you're getting married and not put that aside and recognize the impact that that'll have psychologically on your children. And it may not manifest itself in your in the first generation, but it'll perhaps manifest itself in the next generation. So a Talmid Chacham, he's always looking to ensure that his children are raised not only by Talmidei Chachamim, but they're also not exposed to households where there's fighting, where there's davar maguna. So these are all aspects of trying to raise children that are on a certain level. And then the third idea was this idea of simcha and schok that we learn out from Elishev and Aaron, which is the concept that man feels secure when they're happy, when they're laughing, and the security is false. And the concept is that the psyche tricks a person because when they're happy, they feel like they'll never be sad, they'll never experience sadness. But the point is that you will, everyone does, at some point in their life, and you have to be prepared for it at all times, or else you'll be vulnerable to the mourning and to the sadness. And we see that from Elisheva and Aaron, that they were so happy. And I'm sure anybody in that situation would feel invincible in that moment. But at the same time, right away, everything crashed and they became mourners. So the point is that man should be aware of the way his psyche affects him when he's happy and when he's laughing, and understand that these are things that are traps for a person psychologically, and they perhaps create opportunities for man to fail when they approach mourning. And then the last point was just this Pinchas idea, which is that Pinchas shows you or demonstrates, based on Aaron and Aaron's choices of who he married, that Pinchas shows you the importance of raising your children in an environment which is clearly one of Chachma, and if there's any exposure, and that's what the Gemara is alluding to, that perhaps he was exposed, and they're showing, no, he wasn't, that he was far removed from Yisro. And the idea, I think, is trying to show you that to develop an individual like Pinchas, you need an environment, person to be raised in an environment which is conducive to that. And that would be an environment where Chachma and Torah is really the essence. So I think that's the idea. Okay, so now.